however she feels. Supreme Court justices are not supposed to influence our presidential elections until there's a recount in Florida. All right? So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Why? Why?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. And Radio Sputnik, 5 days a week, blanketing planet Earth. You can run, but you can't hide from The Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, there is a lot of guessing about what actually will or won't happen at next week's Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. We will be joined momentarily by someone who actually understands stuff like how the RNC Rules Committee works, whether delegates will actually be free to vote their conscience, or if they will be legally bound to vote for Donald Trump, whether they like it or not, and also to find out what history may tell us about this insane presidential election, particularly from a Republican perspective. Presidential historian and an advisor to two Republican presidents and a host of Republican presidential campaigns will join us to speak momentarily to offer some insight, hopefully, into the mysteries and madness that may await us in Cleveland next week. Also coming up a bit later, Desi Doyen with the latest Green News Report. Hi, Des.
Hey.
On how the GOP platform will be dealing with or not dealing with the environment.
The mystery.
Yes, we will discuss in that report, among other things, the one word that the Republican Party added to their platform this week that, frankly, makes it just amazing, at least to me, when it comes to the climate and the environment. And our latest Green News Report, I should add, features what I think, don't know about you, Des, but I think, hands down, the funniest snarky comment in a Green News Report ever.
I believe I have to agree with you on that one.
This one comes courtesy of Senator Al Franken. So that alone is worth hanging on and listening to The Bradcast today for. And also something that we didn't have time for in our Green News Report today, but up in Alaska, this Brian Brettschneider, a climatologist from Alaska, PhD climatologist, he tweeted that on Wednesday there was an all-time record of 84 degrees Fahrenheit at Dead Horse, Alaska. That's a record for any weather station within 50 miles of the Arctic Ocean. But if you don't know Alaska, Dead Horse is up on the northern coast of Alaska, like the most northernmost part
of
Alaska.
Yes, the last bit of land before you hit the ocean at the very top of the planet.
Man, 84 degrees at the most northern part of Alaska.
And this is inside the Arctic Circle.
This is like hundreds of miles into the Arctic Circle, 84 degrees. And I checked after I saw that tweet at 9:20 p.m. It was still 79 degrees there. So other than that, well, you know, nothing's wrong. Why worry? Speaking of why worrying, no, I don't. Actually, that's a bad segue. Mike Pence is now being floated. A lot of media reporting from anonymous sources at this time as we go to air that Trump's selection for vice president will be Indiana Governor Mike Pence. We'll see if that comes to pass. We will know at this time tomorrow, and I know some of our affiliates play the program the next day, so they may already know whether it's Pence or not. It's all based currently on anonymous sources from within the Trump camp, but a lot of them. Like I said, it could easily be a feint, a head fake. In any event, Trump has said he'll make that announcement 11 a.m. on Friday in Manhattan. So nobody knows right now. Everyone's just guessing. Pence is the one-term controversial and pretty unpopular governor Republican governor, obviously, from the Hoosier State. He served in the House for 12 years. Prior to that, he was a talk radio host. So, yeah, it's about time a talk radio host commanded the seat of power that
you wish.
We justly deserve. Anyway, we will have plenty of time to talk about Mike Pence, if, in fact, it turns out to be Mike Pence. And who disagrees, by the way, with Donald Trump on a lot of stuff. But anyway, we'll hold that speculation for others and for the next program when we actually know. We do actually know a little bit about who's going to be showing up at the Republican National Convention to speak now, thanks to Jeremy Peters over at the New York Times, who outlined, you know, Donald Trump had promised star power at the convention. Well, instead of that, we'll have a focus on Benghazi and a professional golfer, the head of the, United Fighting Championship?
UFC.
Yes. And not a lot of stars, actually. Even the great Republican star Sarah Palin is so far, anyway, not on the schedule. Instead, you have the second-rate Sarah Palins, like Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, Governor Mary Fallon of Oklahoma, and, of course, all of Donald Trump's children and at least one of his wives. That's what we know so far. Scott Walker will be speaking. Mitch McConnell will be speaking. Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow will be speaking. NFL's Tim Tebow and some astronaut or another who was actually the first, I think she's the first woman to lead a space shuttle mission. So there's that. Not that she's very well known, but that's what we know, what the guessing is about the Republican convention at this point. So we'll learn more in the days ahead, and maybe we'll have some insight from my guest coming up. Yesterday on the program, however, I covered a couple of polls, and I, you know, cover all of the polls as they come in, good and bad, when they're notable in any event, one way or another, for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, obviously, before that. But I got a lot of criticism yesterday over at Daily Kos, which is supposedly a progressive website where we post the broadcast amongst many other places. And they're, of course, they're huge, huge Hillary fans over there. And if you even discuss anything that is not positive in some fashion or another for Hillary Clinton, whether it's based on facts or not, the commenters there kind of freak out. I think it's weird. I think they would want to know if there are concerns about their presumptive nominee. They just freak out, and they pilloried me.
Attempted to.
I was pilloried over Hillary over at Daily Kos for reporting on the Quinnipiac and the Maris polls that came out on Wednesday, finding that Hillary Clinton was dropping in her polls against Donald Trump following the FBI announcement that they would not bring any indictment, that they would not recommend an indictment against her after FBI Director James Comey delivered the actual facts from the FBI's investigation at a press conference and nearly 5 hours of testimony before Congress. And by the way, I think that and clearly that has had an effect on her polls, at least for now. We'll see if it's temporary or not. But it has had an effect on a number of polls, both nationally and in some key swing states. And I pointed that out yesterday because, you know, it's news and it's facts and stuff like that. Well, some of the commenters at Daily Kos actually, you know, freaked out about this and pointed to the fact that Quinnipiac has, in fact, been critiqued over time for having polls that are overly weighted towards a white electorate, which is not as white anymore as Quinnipiac seems to make it in their polls. And that's true. I'm not an expert in polling. It's true that they have faced that criticism before. But most notably, I was pointing out Quinnipiac's poll in Florida as compared to Quinnipiac's poll in Florida just a month ago.
So apples to apples.
Apples to apples. So even if you say that Quinnipiac overly weights the electorate in their polls, okay, so be it. She plummeted 11 points in that Quinnipiac poll in Florida. She had led 47-39 just a month ago in the Quinnipiac poll. Now Trump leads 42-39 in the Quinnipiac poll, the same poll in Florida. That is notable. Also, they find that they are tied in Ohio, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and that Trump, I'm sorry, actually Trump leads. Yeah, they're tied in Ohio, and he leads in Pennsylvania by 2 points, according to Quinnipiac. But NBC News also found similar numbers for Hillary Clinton since the FBI announcement, and since it, I should add, she will not, they've announced she will not be brought up on charges. And as a matter of fact, we spent quite a bit of time on this show pointing out how a lot of the criticism of Hillary Clinton over that private email server is, in fact, overblown, according to the actual facts noted by the FBI. And in fact, that, you know, the idea that she passed on the emails that were marked as classified is greatly overstated.
The media has done that damage, and that damage has been done.
The media has done that, but also voters. This is the way voters are seeing it, both Republican and Democratic alike. And it is affecting the polls here. And yes, you're right, because of the way the media is not being clear about what was found and what wasn't, what Hillary said and what she didn't. And in fact, what the James Comey said was that it didn't seem like Hillary was lying. He seemed to indicate that she really didn't know, that she really didn't fully understand what was and wasn't being done with her own email server. We went to great measures to point that out. Nonetheless, everyone does not listen to the broadcast, only the smart people out there. And so everyone else, you know, just goes with what they hear in the corporate mainstream media. And that has had an effect on the polls. And you would think that folks who claim to be progressive, claim to be interested in the Democratic candidate and making sure in this case that she wins, that they would welcome this news so they can in some fashion act upon it. As I say, it was not just Quinnipiac. It was also NBC Marist that found similar numbers. And on Thursday, once again, another source, CBS New York Times, finds that Clinton and Trump are now tied nationally after she has lost what looks like a 6-point lead that she had previously, just a week or two ago. They are now tied 40-40 in the new New York Times poll, New York Times CBS poll, released Thursday morning. This was after Clinton had led Trump by 6 points, 43-37 last month. In the new poll, 67% of registered voters said Clinton is not honest and trustworthy. That's a 5-point jump from last month. As for Trump, 62% said he was not honest and trustworthy. So more people think Hillary Clinton is not honest or trustworthy, according to this poll. Take it for what it's worth, but take it. Pay attention to it. Also, in this poll, drilling down very quickly here, the economy and jobs, Americans found Trump beating Clinton 52-41. 52-41 over Hillary Clinton. Trade with other countries. Donald Trump is up on trade over Hillary, 47-46. They are equal in this poll, 46-46, when it comes to terrorism and national security. She is 3 points better than him on illegal immigration. And on race relations, she absolutely wipes out Donald Trump. But them's the facts. And furthermore, if you take all of these national polls, the polling average, according to the New York Times and their system, however they average out polls, Clinton is only up by 1 point over Donald Trump nationally, according to the New York Times national polling average. According to the Real Clear Politics average, Clinton is up by just 3 points over Donald Trump. And according to the Talking Points memo, definitely a progressive Democratic media outlet, the TPM poll tracker average finds Donald Trump up over Clinton nationally on average by 1 point. Essentially a dead heat, but pay attention, ignore it at your peril, be in denial at your peril. I think voters are better off and the electorate is better off when they are armed with the facts. That's what we try to do here. Anyway, that's not good news for Hillary Clinton or Democrats who are in denial or otherwise. But speaking of denial, the Republican Party is holding their national convention in Cleveland next week. And what might or could happen there concerning Donald Trump and the last remaining never Trump dead enders? Well, what could happen? Could they really block Donald Trump's nomination and or select someone else entirely? Seems unlikely, but we'll get perspective on that from a presidential historian and advisor to Republican presidents and candidates next. Someone who actually knows stuff. Imagine that next on the broadcast. Hey, it's Brad, and you're listening to the broadcast on Radio Sputnik. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Like everyone else, we're trying to guess what may go on in Cleveland next week at the Republican National Convention, reading the tea leaves. It's an unusual time, frankly. Normally, we know a lot more about what will happen at these conventions than we do this year. We do now have some information, a bit of a schedule reported by the New York Times. Other than that, who knows? Who knows if that's going to change? Who knows if the delegates are going to vote as they have been required to vote by their states? There's a lot of unknowns here. So to discuss some of those unknowns and the known knowns and the known unknowns or whatever it is, I'm joined by presidential historian, New York Times bestselling author, and a man who has served as an advisor to two U.S. presidents, both named Bush, as I recall. Doug Weed has been part of 8 presidential campaigns. He's an expert on political conventions, and he is currently featured in the PBS documentary The White House Inside Story, premiering this week. Check your local PBS listings, as they say. He was also a 2012 Ron Paul campaign senior advisor, which is when we last spoke. That was back in June of 2012, I believe. Doug Weed, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Good to have you here. Listen, I'm trying, like everyone else, to get my head around what could or couldn't, what can or can't or might happen at next week's convention in Cleveland. And I want to ask you about all of that. But first, I recall many months ago when Ted Cruz won the Wisconsin primary and everybody in the corporate media was briefly on about how this was the end of Trump. Cruz would now ascend to front runner status. But you wrote at the time, as I recall, I think the headline was Cruz wins Wisconsin, Trump wins the nomination. How did you know that way back then? And what was the reason that you saw Trump finishing off the rest of the field as he quickly did thereafter?
Well, just the numbers and history. I think what is missing from some who crunch the numbers is the power of momentum and sequential momentum. So it's not just winning Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, it's winning them back to back that gives just tremendous, almost unstoppable power. And in the case of Trump, he had already stacked up enough delegates that it was pretty unstoppable. I'll put it to you this way: if you had to go out there and bag 30 more deer to meet your quota,
right,
or 300 more deer, which would be the chore you'd want to take? It's a whole lot easier hunting for delegates when you're that far ahead, as Trump was, than it is when you're Ted Cruz.
So was that, and we saw a lot of this throughout the season, the primary season, I think. So was that, essentially wishful thinking from folks who I think were in denial from day one? We've been talking about, how well Trump was going to do with this particular Republican Party. Was this just the people who could not believe what was actually happening when you actually, as you say, Doug, looked at the math, looked at the numbers that clearly he was cleaning up everywhere?
Not totally. The establishment saw how close the Ron Paul folk came to getting their man nominated on the floor and getting his speech at the convention. They felt how vulnerable they were, how the Ron Paul insurgency won the delegates, even though they had lost the primaries. And they watched with astonishment as Trump just did not pick up the physical delegates as people, as individuals. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way it works is you're the county chairman and you were a delegate last time to the RNC, and you call me up and say, "Hey, Doug, buddy, you want to go to the RNC this year?" And I say, "Oh, sure, that'd be great. You're going to do what I tell you now, right? I'm going to go stick my head out here and stick my neck out. I'm going to get you on the slate, but I need you to be a loyal soldier." And I say, "Absolutely, Brad, count on me." So that's the way it kind of works. And those people are not necessarily for Trump. They're not necessarily for Cruz. They're party establishment folk. And most of them this time around were left untouched, which means the majority of them were for Mitt Romney. And that's why you had this outrageous moment where Romney gave a national speech and acted like he was a candidate,
right?
Because he knew by name many of those delegates that were headed to RNC, and Trump didn't understand how to replace them with his own people, and he hadn't done it.
So
that's why they felt maybe they had a shot.
Well, there is some irony, it seems, in them, in the establishment, taking on the Ron Paul strategy that he had used to take on the establishment. It's kind of amazing. Now, you're an expert, I should say, in delegates and party conventions at the county and state and national level. Knowing what you know about how the delegates are chosen, when did it become clear that Trump had sewn this thing up? And then we'll talk about whether he actually does have it sewn up in Cleveland with the Rules Committee and everything else. But when you looked at those numbers, how early did that become clear to you? Because, like I say, there are still people that seem to be in denial today about it.
Yeah, it began to become clear to me when I saw how divided the GOP establishment was. They're not monolithic. Mm-hmm. They each have different desires, and what drives most of them is what drives most of political folk in the Democrat and Republican Party is power and money. And so there are conservative movement conservatives who are essentially Catholic conservatives, and they publish magazines, and they have companies that are on the fast track for federal dollars. I was astonished when I went into the White House to have some of these conservatives come into my office and say, "Now you've got to get us federal dollars for this and that," and all these companies. I'm thinking, "Hey, wait a minute. I thought we're the conservatives. I thought the liberal Democrats did that." Mm-hmm. They said, "Well, we got to do it when we're in power, just like they do it when they're in power. That's the way it works." Mm. So you've got all these people feeding at the pig trough that are part of the Republican establishment. That's how the Republican Party finances itself. That's how the Democrat Party finances itself. But as they squabble over the money and who's going to get the money, they aren't united, and they couldn't unite behind Cruz, and they couldn't unite behind Romney. And so there's a block of them that will do what Sununu says, a block of them that will do what Romney says, and a block of them who will go with the winner, which in this case looked to be Donald Trump.
I think that a lot of it had to do with also with simply misunderestimating, if I can use that word, Mr. Trump. Donald Trump throughout this had been underestimated by a lot of the people in the establishment, in the media, among the electorate. How concerned, Doug Weed, do you think that Democrats should now be about that same underestimation of Trump's candidacy?
Yeah, he could win. It could happen. Very much so. I mean, he's transformed politics. It used to be, you know, it was the 30, 45-second answer, then the 30-second. Then I remember rehearsing President George H.W. Bush on the 20-second answer. The most complex nuclear proliferation, environmental, educational question had to be answered in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And Trump has reduced it to words. Three words, make America great on the positive, and two words on his attack. Yeah, Lion, Ted, Little Marco, and mm-hmm. Crooked Hillary. So it's all changed, and he's brilliant at branding, and he didn't get a lot of the delegate thing strategy right, but he did so much right that it's been transformative political, and it's going to be an interesting election.
The RNC, the Rules Committee, as I understand it, I believe today they're debating changes to the convention delegate rules that might allow somehow delegates to be freed up from their obligation of voting for whoever they've been chosen to vote for by their states. Setting that aside for the moment, if that will be allowed, or even if it would work to somehow unseat Trump at this late date, seems like another pipe dream, frankly, from the Never Trumpers. But how would that work exactly? What is the Rules Committee for the GOP allowed to do? Can they come up with any rules that they want, even this late in the game before the convention?
Well, they can do whatever they want. It's like your homeowners association. It's not like the U.S. government with the, you know, it does have its own constitution, but it can change it. So they do have the ability to do it. They did that to us, to the Ron Paul campaign, and had us literally bodily picked up and removed and carried off the convention floor, mm-hmm. even though we had been legally elected as delegates at the county level and then at the state level. And it so sickened the governor of Maine that he walked off the floor when he saw those young people disenfranchised by mm-hmm. the party establishment. So they can do what they want, but if it were to happen, and it isn't going to happen, but if it were to happen, it would totally destroy any chances Republicans have of winning. And there are people who don't care about that. There are Republicans, it's all about money, and they don't care. They'd rather lose than have a loose cannon in there who may or may not assure them of the money that their company wants to have from the federal government, from the taxpayers. It's as Trump famously says, it's rigged. Mm. He's right. It's rigged.
So you see no chance that the Never Trumpers are going to pull off a change with. Now, what about this? There was a delegate.
By the way, Brad, they say to release these delegates to vote their conscience.
Yeah.
But it's not like these are people who have a conscience. It's insider establishment people who want to be free to use the power they have as a vote to get money and to get things in exchange and to pit one delegate or one block against another so they can get something for their community or for themselves. And that's why they want the freedom to vote their conscience. And to do that, they'd have to violate all their state laws, but it can be done technically, but it's not practical, because Trump can also bargain for those delegates. There's things that he can give. And I'd a lot rather come out of this election being with an IOU from Donald Trump than I would with an IOU from John Sununu.
Now, when you say bargain, they actually, you literally mean they can do that. Trump can offer things to these delegates. Is that correct, that that's perfectly legal?
Yes, it is legal unless it's a candidate. Let's say it's the governor is a delegate to the convention, and he has state laws that bind him ethically about gifts that he can receive and not receive. But if they're not an elected official and bound by those laws, Trump can do what he'd like, and politicians have done that.
Money?
The Kennedys famously did that. Old Joe Kennedy bought and sold a lot of votes at the convention.
So literally, money, cash, he can offer cash to the delegates legally if he wanted to?
Well, usually that sort of thing is avoided, but it can be. It's not that blatant. It's not that the candidate would come up mm-hmm. and offer you cash. It's you're in a hotel room with three or four other people, and the candidate comes walking in, and he shakes your hand. The picture's taken, and a pulls you aside. He says, they were telling me on the way up in the elevator about your mother and what she's going through, and this is outrageous in the insurance companies, and now they're not going to pay for the operation, and I'm just flabbergasted. But I can tell you, I take care of my people. I take care of, look at me, look me in the eye. I take care of my people. Mm-hmm. And it's up to you. You leave that convention, you may leave it thinking, gee, a vote for Donald Trump is a vote for my mama.
Wow. And, of course, Donald Trump would never do anything like that. I'm speaking with Doug Weed, presidential historian, New York Times best-selling author, advisor to a number of Republican presidents and presidential campaigns. Doug, you laughed at the idea that these delegates would be free to vote their conscience because, as you see it, the establishment, the folks in power, the Republicans in power, they want to stay in power. They want their money. They want their federal contracts, as you describe it. But what of the actual delegates? There was one in Virginia who went to federal court. He obtained a ruling just a couple of days ago that he was allowed to change his vote, or at least that he couldn't be fined by the party if he did not vote for Trump, as he had been voted to do by the via the state's primary. Does that court ruling only apply to Virginia's delegate? I mean, the sense that I got was that that this guy was for real, that he really wanted to vote his conscience. I don't know him personally, but when you have delegates on the floor who really are offended by Donald Trump, is there anything there that are these delegates now freed up by this court decision, as you understand it, to vote their conscience as they see it?
I'd have to read and study that particular mm-hmm. case, but each law has different laws. I mean, in each, the party has different laws in each state, how long they're bound and why they're bound. For example, in South Carolina, they had the famous Lindsey Graham law, and the party powers that be said, you know, Lindsey Graham might not win the nomination. So at the time, they were thinking, this guy's, Lindsey Graham's, you know, going to try to get the nomination. He's certainly going to carry South Carolina. Absolutely will carry South Carolina. But let's say he carries South Carolina and then he gets eliminated later on in the contest and he drops out. What happens to those delegates? So they passed a law for the South Carolina delegates called the Lindsey Graham Rule, which said if any of the candidates who won in South Carolina drop out after the effect afterwards, then the delegates that they had won will go to the next highest vote getter in the South Carolina primary. So all of those type of laws, which affected, of course, Marco Rubio and where his delegates went mm-hmm. after South Carolina, all those laws can be challenged in court, to be able to cobble together a victory for someone other than Donald Trump by doing that is pretty remote. And quite frankly, Donald Trump, there's a lot of good and bad about Donald Trump, but I think he's right when he says that would be outrageous for the party to allow that to happen.
So it's a fait accompli at this point as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, it's a fait accompli. And in 1880, the United States was faced with a choice between a corrupt politician who took money in return for favors and a New York misogynist who actually was a law partner, and he and his law partner shared the sexual favors of a young lady, and when she became pregnant, our erstwhile presidential candidate stepped forward and assumed paternity of the child. And when one of his law partners died, the New York lawyer raised his daughter, became the guardian of the daughter, raised her. When she became a teenager, she fell in love with him. And when she turned 21, she married the man who had raised her, her ward. It was the only White House wedding, Grover Cleveland, and 21-year-old Frances Folsom, who became the first lady. So that was 1880, Charles Blaine against Grover Cleveland. So we've seen some bizarre things happen before.
I guess we have, but you have to go all the way back to 1880 to find anything quite so bizarre, I think, as what we're seeing. But we don't have to go back that far to Ronald Reagan. You wrote a blog article not long ago, Doug, at your blog, dougweed.wordpress.com, with the headline, Trump is Reagan. And I'm wondering what you mean by that, because we've been talking on this program since Donald Trump got in the race that, again, as far as people underestimating his popularity with the public, Reagan was a movie star, Donald Trump is a TV star, and that seems to have brought both of them a long way. But what did you mean by Trump is Reagan, as you see it, Doug?
Yeah, they're both non-politicians. They were both Democrats. They both went through divorce. There were some similarities. They're lined up on the issues remarkably similar, even though years apart. Their position on abortion, for example, is exactly the same and a very nuanced position, and their position on gun control. And so there are some similarities. There's some huge differences, too. They're both from show business.
Mm-hmm.
Some very big differences, too. But I wrote it mostly. I wrote that blog to send a little warning. Don't underestimate this guy,
yeah.
Because Ronald Reagan was seen as a warmonger and a racist. No way he could get elected.
Mm-hmm.
And he defied the prognosticators and
yeah,
won.
And that is something that I think another place where I think Democrats are underestimating it. People thought Reagan could never win, but then he sure did, and it shifted the entire party along with him to the right. You've already said you think that Trump, in fact, could win. So let me move on to his vice presidential pick. It is being reported from via anonymous sources in the Trump campaign that Indiana Governor Mike Pence is going to be the pick. We'll see if that comes to be the case. But I think he might be an old colleague of yours, Bruce Bartlett. Also a bit of a disaffected Republican, I think, worked with the George H.W. Bush administration. He tweeted, case for Mike Pence is basically the case for Sarah Palin in 2008. He's so stupid, he will make the nominee look smarter by comparison. Now, do you agree with the former Reagan administration official, Bruce Bartlett, who I think worked with Ron Paul and George H.W. Bush, as I recall?
Well, I don't know. I know we had our own situation with George H.W. Bush. We were going with a candidate that we had vetted, and everybody said he's the one, and mm-hmm. we thought he was the one, and the demographics lined up, and it had nice balance. And then in the last minute, some things popped up in his background, and they jumped to Dan Quayle, and he had not we had really not spent enough time vetting Quayle. So some felt that was a mistake. We won. We didn't win re-election in 92.
Who were you,
Clinton, but
who were you going to pick before you picked Dan Quayle?
Jack Kemp.
Oh, okay.
Jack Kemp.
But, of course, Bush ended up winning that year anyway, so I guess that worked out okay, which raises the question, do vice presidential picks, as you have seen them, Doug Weed, as a presidential historian, do they ever actually have a real outcome effect on the outcome of the presidential election as you see it?
You know, it depends on your point of reference, and most people believe that they don't. Most historians believe that they don't, that they don't make that big of a difference. But in a close election, everything makes a difference. And I think there are times, I think there's no question that Lyndon Johnson made a difference for John Kennedy in 1960. And so there are times when the vice president can make a big difference. That's why I think probably Kemp would have been a wiser choice, and we haven't heard what the choice is, simply because he's been so thoroughly vetted on the national stage, and he's debated on the national stage, and he's sort of the Nixon of this period, in the good sense, the good Nixon, not the bad Nixon. You remember 1964, Goldwater went down to defeat, and Rockefeller and Scranton and all the Republican establishment, all the national media were saying, this is the end of the Republican Party, this is a disaster. But one man got in there and tried hard and fought for all the congressmen and senators up for re-election, and 4 years later he was president, and that was Richard Nixon. And I see Gingrich in a similar role, one of the few who publicly has really defended Donald Trump, and I think he probably would have been a wiser choice. So we'll see if we'll see what happens when they announce it, and if it is Pence, then we'll see how that plays out. We'll soon know how smart or dumb he is.
We indeed. Can you see the establishment coming around now to Trump? Because, yes, they pick someone who is an establishment choice like Mike Pence, and both Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell have both said they would support Mike Pence. Will that make a difference in the way the party itself works with the president, the presidential nominee on the Republican side?
Yes, I think you're right on the money, and that probably is why, if he goes with Pence, that's probably why he's done it. Gingrich is not as popular with some of those same people that you mentioned.
You've worked with George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush. None of the Bushes will be appearing at the convention, reportedly. Have you had any conversation with any of them or with Jeb about where they are right now when it comes to their own party?
Well, I had conversation with one member of the family, and he was just kind of astonished at what was happening. But I think that they're very philosophical, the Bush family, and they're wise, and they know that this might be, in a way, a nice face-saving moment for them, because even if a party establishment figure had won the nomination, it's not likely that the Bushes would have been highly featured at this convention for political reasons. The war in Iraq is just not being seen well historically as a wise move, and it's not something that the candidate going into this election needs to remind people that the last Republican president led us into the Iraq War and into the second worst depression in American history. So it's not someone you want hanging around there with the camera taking shots of.
And what about Ron Paul? You were a big Ron Paul supporter, advisor, in fact. Haven't heard much from either Ron Paul or Rand Paul since he dropped out of the presidential race. Any idea where they are on this whole Donald Trump thing at this point?
Well, you know, Ron Paul is a purist, so Trump's not a purist, but a lot of the people around him kind of like Trump. They see him as the class clown. They don't like what he's saying about the fat girl across the room, but they love the fact that he's disrupting the class, and they see him as a loose cannon that can't be guaranteed by the big banks and the establishment to do what they want. And so the fact that they have some of the same enemies has made for some intriguing moments for some in the Paul camp.
Finally, and I haven't even asked you this, Doug, and I don't know if you can answer it or not, but who are you supporting? Are you in the tank at this point for Donald Trump or any other Republican candidate or any other candidate, period, in this race?
Well, as a historian, I'm trying to stay objective and stay neutral, but I identify with a lot of the Ron Paul people that I just mentioned who like Trump because of his of the disruption he's causing. It is just very unfair for me to see the free enterprise system so corrupted, so absolutely turned on its head, and the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer under a well-intentioned Barack Obama at a staggering rate, as the study at the University of California in Berkeley showed. It's tragic what is happening to young people, what is happening to this country. It's we look at 9/11, and in a way, I hate to say this, but in a way, the terrorists won. They didn't defeat our spirit, but they have certainly changed our form of government. It's different now than it once was in many respects, and certainly the economy after the war in Iraq and mm-hmm. the collapse of the American economy, it's changed dramatically. The American dream is very elusive now mm-hmm. for many, many people. They just won't be able to have it.
And you think a Republican administration could better deal with that at this point than a Democratic administration?
I think that the people who make money, who benefit off of a corrupt system right now, are people who are connected to the establishment in the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, and it's indivisible. As the chairman of Goldman Sachs said a year or two ago, and was later became quite a controversy over whether he said it or not, and later afterwards he said, well, you know, I could have said it. He said, Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush, either one would be just fine with me. And I think that the big banks and the large institutions that benefit from a rigged system are in place, and that's going to be ongoing, and that there's no way you're going to make money. You're not going to make enough money in your lifetime to give something to your grandchildren. There's a proverb in the Bible that says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. It's not very possible to be a good man in the United States of America. You can save that money, you can invest it in real estate, you can do whatever you want with it, but they're going to come after it, and they're going to get it before you die. You're going to be reduced substantially financially, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Thanks for cheering us all up. Doug Weed, presidential historian, New York Times best-selling author. I know you're going to be on the TV machine next week during the Republican National Convention, I think on Fox News, and staying far, far away from the convention. That may be a good idea. I hope you don't mind if we check in with you from time to time next week, depending on how things go. Doug Weed, you can find his work at dougweed.com and his blog at dougweed.wordpress.com. And you can bother him all you like on the Twitters at Doug Weed. And his name is spelled W-E-A-D every time. Doug, great talking to you. Look forward to doing it again in the future.
Thanks very much, Brad.
You bet. All right, a quick break, and we are back with the Green News Report and what I think may be the funniest snarky comment ever in a Green News Report. That's straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik. Yeah, I wish we could stop the world, keep it from melting.
I know.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with our latest Green News Report.
The Democrat Party does not understand that coal is an abundant, clean, affordable, reliable domestic energy resource.
Porn is dirty, but coal is clean in the Republican Party platform.
Helping to spread disinformation or misinformation or what we sometimes call lies. That's what they do for a living.
Senate Democrats call out the web of professional climate deniers. Fort McMurray fired the most expensive disaster in Canadian history. June was the hottest on record for the United States. Plus, another fracking explosion, this time in New Mexico.
All of those fracking stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And in 50 years, I don't want my grandson, Joe, to turn to me and say, Grandpa, you were in the Senate and you knew about the severity of climate change. Why didn't you do anything to stop it? And also, why are you still alive?
This is your Green News Report.
You're 115 years old.
Okay, Desi Doyen. Boy, do I love Al Franken. That said, here's what it sounded like this week at the Republican Party's platform drafting committee.
We're adding one word, and it's the word clean between abundant and affordable. Adding the word clean.
That's all they're doing, adding the word clean.
Yeah, that's the Republican Party's official platform committee that adopted that position on Monday in advance of their national convention. They call internet pornography a, quote, public health crisis, but not coal, despite the fact that coal literally causes the death and disease of tens of thousands of Americans every single year. Self-described historian and author David Barton passed the amendment with the help of Wyoming Republican Senator John Barrasso.
I would insert the adjective clean along with coal, particularly because of the technology we have now. So the Democrat Party does not understand that coal is an abundant, clean, affordable, reliable domestic energy resource.
Who knew? Coal is a clean resource? Really?
Yep, and the vote was unanimous to label toxic coal as clean.
Unbelievable.
But the technology that Barton was referring to, it's carbon capture, it's an epic and expensive failure, as detailed in a blockbuster investigation by the New York Times of the taxpayer-subsidized Kemper carbon capture plant in Mississippi. Yet the clean coal canard lives on.
Well, Republicans don't read the New York Times, and I'm not sure they actually read anything.
Meanwhile, 19 Senate Democrats called out the climate change denial industry on the Senate floor this week. The web of denial of interconnected think tanks and front groups funded by the fossil fuel industry that have waged a decades-long propaganda campaign to deceive the public about climate science. Here's Minnesota Democratic Senator Al Franken.
These companies are worried that if people knew that what their products are doing to the planet, they would stop buying their products, or public policy would drive the markets away from their products. So in order to protect their bottom line, they set out to misinform the public. That's what they do for a living.
And ExxonMobil is still funding the climate change denial industry, despite claiming otherwise. That's according to a new analysis of Exxon's charitable contribution disclosures by DeSmogBlog.com. Meanwhile, NOAA reported this week that June 2016 was the hottest June ever recorded in the continental United States, breaking the record set just last year. June's record heat also generated multiple extreme storms and floods in the U.S., putting 2016 on track to break our previous national record for the most billion-dollar weather disasters in one year.
That's fantastic. We win again.
Speaking of billion-dollar disasters driven by extreme weather, Canada's Insurance Bureau confirmed this week that the Fort McMurray fire in Alberta's tar sands oil region is the most expensive disaster in Canadian history, causing more than $3 billion worth of damage. Officials say the fire is officially under control, but may take until next summer to put out entirely.
Wow. Just so ironical. The fact that right there, the tar sands where they're pulling out this dirty oil that they want to ship down to the U.S., that it has been engulfed in flames due to the dry, hot weather caused by climate change, caused by their dirty oil. It just never ceases to amaze.
Finally, another fracking explosion, this time in New Mexico. A raging fire, but thankfully no injuries after an explosion at a new oil fracking well site on public lands near historic Chaco Canyon National Historic Park. Residents were forced to evacuate due to heavy smoke because the state allows such drill sites to be located near homes, despite the high risk of wildfire in the very dried out West.
So the Democratic Party is putting wind and solar above fracking, finally, in their party platform. At the same time, the Republicans are trying to tell the world that coal is clean.
Yes.
For much more on all of these stories today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. You know who does dirty deeds for dirt cheap?
No, who?
For the Republican Party, for the tobacco industry, and for the fossil fuel industry?
Gosh, who?
That'd be Mike Pence. Yeah,
remember what Doug Weed said? Pigs at the trough.
Yeah, coming up on the next thrilling edition of the Bradcast and the Green News Report, no doubt. Thank you, Desi Doyen, for that report and for producing today's program as ever. Thanks to my guest, Doug Weed. Check out his work at DougWeed.com. Or just wait for the gas to start flying next week in Cleveland. And thanks to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, you can download it as ever for free at bradblog.com and over at the iTunes and your favorite podcast site, anywhere you like. Also, you can reach me on the Facebooks and the Twitters. I am the Brad Blog at both places. You can leave me comments at bradblog.com or at the Daily Coast. And what else? Oh, email. I am bradcast at bradblog.com. That's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.